Yes. There was a story that I was hoping you'd say. You know when you were talking about which your favourite story was?
Yeah.
Wasn't there one about somebody falling into a fish tank?
Oh, yeah. That was just another
day. That's just
day.
A regular occurrence, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the fourth son. So the other story was about the other three sons. That was the fourth son. We used to have this massive, like the biggest fish tank you could imagine, because my husband was really into keeping fish, marine fish. And one morning, on Saturday morning, the boys were all up and I'd gone to the bathroom. Levi was, I'm guessing, about 18 months old. And I was in the bathroom and I heard this noise that was a bit like a, you know, like a massive body of water moving. And I'm thinking, I'm already in the bathroom. Can't be the bath. What other large body of water is there in this house? This was a split second thought. I just thought, fish tank. Got out of there, ran down just in time to see Levi submerged, up, coming back up like this, going, stood in the fish tank with all the, it's got like live rock in it and things like that. The whole thing was just, you couldn't see because the sand had all come up. And he'd managed to push a chair up, climb on top. And we'd managed successfully to keep all our children out of the fish tank for years. And then suddenly he comes along. He also broke his arm like within a couple of months as well. We were like, gosh, we thought we'd already seen it with these three. And yeah, and there he was. So I kind of got him out, hauled him out, dragged him off, a bit traumatized, ran upstairs to my husband, woke him up because it was his turn for a line, and said, Levi was just in the fish tank. And he went, are the fish okay?
Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely worth telling.
Yeah. Over to you.
Thanks, Jen. Yeah, so as you can tell, a lot of the story of my life really comes from a place of chaos. Speaking of which, I don't have a watch on because I keep losing my watch and I want to make sure that I don't go over, and I don't have an internal clock at all. Nobody in our family does. That's why we can't be on time for anything. So I'm just going to keep an eye on that as I go along. My life largely has come from a place of chaos. You know, when you're kind of in a place where you have more ideas than time, where you start one project before you finish the next. That's kind of generally how things have been in my life. And I married somebody very similar to that as well. So we've always sort of kind of run along doing all these things. So when we got married, it was like, yeah, let's have children immediately. So we did that while doing youth work. Went to Bible college with the three of them, planted a church as we were expecting our fourth child. And then for some reason, just carried on going and had a fifth as well. And then we thought, we really need to stop this. So we stopped at that point, because having lots of children and having a job and trying to start a church as well all at once is quite a challenge. So we tried to calm things down a little bit at this stage once I was pregnant with my fifth child, who did turn out to be a girl. So I had four boys and then a little girl. But our life had other ideas. Our life apparently didn't want to be calm. And as I was pregnant with her, it did lots of things to me. But my body finally gave up, basically, and I couldn't actually walk. And we got some shocking news in the middle of that. One of our twin boys, by that stage, they were six. So we had an eight-year-old, two six-year-olds, a two-year-old, and another one on the way. And so Daniel, he developed these odd symptoms. We weren't overly concerned, but we took him into hospital, and the next thing, he was being rushed down to Manchester Children's Hospital, and they said, there's something very wrong with him. And we said, are you sure? Because he looks fine. And they said, yeah, we've done a scan on his brain and something's not good. And I went down there with him because I wasn't really able to be moving around at home anyway. And my husband looked after the other three boys and did his job and ran the church. And I looked after Daniel in hospital. And we basically spent the next 2.5 years in and out of hospital, in Manchester, in Lancaster, even in London. We had lots of different people involved trying to work out actually what was happening. Our son had something wrong in various different areas of his body, but mainly in his brain. And they were trying to work out what that was. We had amazing specialists, amazing teams looking after us. And we got to the point where they actually gave him a bone marrow transplant to sort of reset his immune system to see if that would work, because he was very seriously ill. And it was a fantastic bone marrow transplant. It worked very well, but it didn't take away the original problem. And so at 8 years old, 2.5 years into this, he died. And that was in May 2012. So that's 3 years ago now. Obviously, that was devastating for us as a family. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know whether to stay in Morecambe and keep doing what we were doing, or whether to come back here in Preston, where we had friends and family, and to kind of find a bit of stability there. But we really felt like the right thing to do was to stay in Morecambe. New people started coming to the church. Things were incredible. Things were really moving on. And then suddenly my husband started developing some strange symptoms as well. His were in his back rather than in his brain. Lots more scans later, lots more trips to the hospital, lots more consultants saying, we know there's something wrong, but we can't work out what it is. Eventually, he got diagnosed with myeloma, which is bone marrow cancer. And normally people only get that when they're much older, and it's a very slow progressing disease. He was diagnosed with it at 38, and within a few months it had just spread really, really quickly, and he died a year ago, May 2014. So in the space of a couple of years, our family of seven went down to a family of five. We've had, and I know that many of you in this room were part of the people either here in Preston or whether you're from further afield, but we had many people praying for us as a family and trying to see us through that time, which was absolutely incredible. And obviously, for that particular, those particular things, the particular things we were asking for was for healing, for things to turn around, and that didn't happen. But what was happening along the way has been absolutely extraordinary. Because as I said, at 13 years old, I met with God. And I think it's really significant that what God did in me as a 13-year-old, he did with the big picture in mind. Because I had no idea what my future was going to hold. All I knew is, as I said earlier, I didn't really want it just to be ordinary. And ordinary can mean lots of different things, can't it? You can live in an ordinary house. You can have a fairly ordinary job. But you can be living for something greater. You can be doing something, living for a much greater purpose than these jobs seem to suggest. You can actually be almost like a superhero who's there with their secret identity, running this seemingly ordinary life, but knowing there's a much bigger picture involved and you're part of a bigger plan. And God planted that in me a long time before any of this happened. He planted it in me a long time before I met my husband and before I had my children and before we started our church. So that when all three of those things were extremely difficult and I looked at them and thought, you know, at three different times in my life, I've looked and thought, am I going to lose my son? Am I going to lose this church? Are we going to have to fold it up? Am I going to lose my husband? And all three of those times, and I don't want to say this flippantly because I'm sure you can guess, but this was no flippant decision at all. But after walking with God closely and praying and speaking to him and agonizing over it, I was able each time to say, God, whatever it is that you want to see happen in these situations, your will be done. And the church is still going. That's still something I'm a part of. But my son and my husband, it was their time. They've gone up to be with the Lord. Throughout all of this, I've always compared life to be a battle. Life is a battlefield, and it talks a lot about that in the Bible. And for some people, you think, oh, that's exhausting. That's really, really wearying. But you know, battle, if what you're made for is battle, if you're made to be a part of it, if you've been trained up, if that's part of who you are, then actually being in that battle is an incredible thing. Because we've all been equipped for the battle already. And I know it seems a bit sort of at odds. We're sat here having a nice tea party and we're ladies. But there's a story I want to bring you from the Bible. And it's from 2 Chronicles 18. And it's about two kings who went into battle. One was Ahab, king of Judah, and king of Israel. And one was Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. I really like the name Jehoshaphat. If we'd have had more boys, that might have made the list, but decided not to. Both of these kings went into this battle, but they made two different decisions. One decided that he wasn't going to wear his robes, his kingly robes, his armor, because he thought, if I do that, if I go out there into the battle, I'm going to become a target. So I'm just going to wear an ordinary person's robe. And the other battle, the other king, sorry, he put on his battle armor that identified him as a king. So they go out onto this battle and they face the enemy. And the tactic looks like it's going to work because all the enemy, they look and they go, there's the king, get the king, and they start aiming towards him. But that king, Jehoshaphat, who we know from other stories in the Bible was walking with God, he cried out and he said, God, help me. And those people turned away from him. They said, no, that's not the right king. We're not going to go and get him. Meantime, Ahab, in his ordinary armor, is fighting the battle over here. And the Bible says, at random, someone drew their arrow at random, and it hit him between the chinks of the armor. And that wound sort of festered all day. He watched the rest of the battle happen, and at the end of the battle, he died. And it really struck me when I read that story about how much we can try and avoid whatever it is that life has got for us. So we can think to ourselves, okay, if life is about being in a battle, if life is always going to be tough and things are always going to happen and there's not really a lot we can do about that, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to try and make sure I'm playing it really low key. So I'm going to go over here and I'm going to try and stay in the quietest part of the battle. I'm going to try and avoid being up there and being on the front line because hopefully then I won't be a target for as many people and I won't have to worry about it. But there's a big difference going into the battle with the armor that is yours, that you've made, your self-made armor, and going into the battle with the armor that God has already made for you. I want to share a story about those really early days of being in hospital with my son. So to put it into context, I hadn't been able to walk at this stage for about 3 months. I'd been trying to look after getting the 3 boys to school every day and having a 2-year-old at home and being heavily pregnant. And my husband was working full time, so he was just trying to do what he could. We had friends that were picking up the boys and taking them to school and things like that. And then this all happened. We get this news that my son needs to be rushed down to Manchester Children's Hospital, and I go down with him in the middle of the night. I was 34 weeks pregnant, because I remember checking when we got there how close the maternity hospital was, and at Manchester they're actually all linked up, and I was like, well, that's really good because I'm contracting right now, so this might be a very interesting night, because they rushed us down there saying your son might have to go to surgery in the middle of the night. It was all a bit frantic. Anyway, over the next couple of days, it was the weekend, and they said, no, our neurosurgeons here have looked and they've said we probably don't need to take him in immediately. We'll run some more tests at the beginning of next week and we'll find out what's happening. And I was like, okay, that's good, because I had time to settle down again. So stopped contracting and I was hoping baby was going to stay in there. And come Monday morning, what happened was every time the doctors came to speak to us, they would have some kind of new information. And when I say us, it was me, really. Like, I had my 6-year-old with me, but you know what 6-year-olds are like. They're in their own little world. He was sat colouring or reading a book or whatever. And when you're on a ward and the doctor comes to see you, I think you're all familiar with this, they come in and the curtains get drawn round and you're there. And then they speak to you about your condition and what's happened. And in that moment, it could be like, oh, that was really good news, that's great. Or it could be, what, you're saying what? What's happened? And pretty much every experience was like that. They'd say, right, we want to run this test. We'd go down for an x-ray or whatever it was. We'd come back up and they'd say, yes, his lungs aren't right. Something wrong with his lungs. Next time, a team of doctors would come around from a different department in the hospital and say, yeah, there's something wrong with his bloods. His bloods aren't right. And they kept coming backwards and forwards. So I'm thinking, right, okay, I now need to take this information in, process it, pretend everything's okay because my 6-year-old's right there, find a way of phoning my husband and relaying the information to him. And then he's got loads of questions for me. And I'm thinking, well, I didn't think of asking the doctors that at the time. I asked lots of other questions, but I didn't ask that one. So now I've got to try and remember that question to speak to the doctor. Knowing as well that I've got all this stuff happening at home, and you know, the house is chaotic because I haven't been able to do anything for the last 3 months, so it's just a complete mess and people are coming to help, which is great, but I'm thinking, oh, the house is just in such a tragic mess at the moment. And there's a lady in the bay opposite me who's been there since we've come in, and it's a neurology ward, so her daughter had a few similar symptoms as well, got rushed in, they'd seen something in her brain, they weren't quite sure what it was. And this woman, I'm kind of an internal processor, so I just kind of keep it all quiet. This woman was an external processor, so she was talking about it a lot, how worried she was, how frantic and all this kind of thing. It was all there on the surface bubbling up. Well, Monday morning, which is where my nightmare had kind of got worse and worse as all this bad news was coming, that was her good time. Her daughter got taken in for a biopsy, and the biopsy came back clear, and the doctor said, we're really happy, we think we've got a plan. They gave her some good news. They said, we're just going to wait 48 hours and monitor her, and then we're going to send her home. And this woman was so excited, and she was bubbling over, and she was just like, oh, this is fantastic. They've said that she can go home, and da-da-da. So every time the doctors came to me, the news was really, really bad, and I'm working out what to do about it. And so the doctors would go, and they'd open the curtain, and I'd be sat there a bit shell-shocked, and the lady would say, have they said when your son's going home yet? I'd be like, well, no, because they don't know what it is. It's actually worse than they thought it was. Oh, well, they told me that it was really, really bad, but we're going home soon, and it's really, really good, and they're really pleased with the progress. And I was like, all right, okay. You know, when you kind of think, oh, you've asked a question, but you're not really thinking about my answer. You're more thinking about where you're at. That's okay. But this would happen every time. So I would be going further and further down, wondering what was happening, trying to hold it all together. And every time this lady would be saying, oh, it'll be fine because my daughter, I was really worried about her and we're going home. Have they told you when you're going home yet? I'm like, no, they don't know what's wrong with him. They don't know. And this lady was doing what we all do in life. We're in our own place. We're doing our own thing. We're fighting our own battle of worry, of panic, of our day going well or our day not going so well. And as we do that, we all need to be equipped for the fight and we all need to be shooting our arrows. So sometimes those are arrows of things are going really well. Ha, in your face, bad news. In your face, 3 days ago, me, where I was really, really worried. And we're shooting off these arrows. But what we never, ever know is who's going to get caught by those arrows as we go. And I'm not saying this to say anything about that lady. That lady was fine. She was trying to be lovely. She wasn't doing anything wrong. But because I was in the crossfire of where she was sending these arrows, they were hitting me and it was hurting. And in the end, I was thinking, I need to get away from this lady. She's making it so much worse for me. And I remember one time just walking away in mid-conversation and sort of going to the toilet cubicle because that was the only place you could go. You know, you've got to keep the curtains open. It's the only place I could go and process, and thinking, I've never walked away from somebody mid-conversation before. Thankfully, I don't think she noticed because she was so excited about her own news. But this story came to my mind as I was thinking about this story in the Bible, because no matter what stage that we're at, how we're emotionally processing things, how we're fighting our battle, we're always doing it alongside other people, aren't we? So we might be somebody who is in quite a busy season of life at the moment with work. And we might be saying, oh, you know, I'm in and out and I've got this massive project at work. And we might be speaking to somebody over here and that person's got very young children at home. And they're thinking, well, okay, that sounds like it's hard work and everything. But oh my goodness, at least you get to sleep in your bed by yourself and you're not down in the middle of the night. And you get to go out to work. Look at you, you're wearing clothes without stains on them. And I can't even really get dressed in the morning. And if this lady is sharing her news with somebody else over here that's thinking, I know you don't know it, but we're struggling at the moment, me and my husband, with our infertility issues, and you're sort of saying how difficult it is with all these little children, but you don't know where I'm at, you don't know the struggles we've got. And somebody over here could be going, her and her husband, they seem to have a really close relationship. I don't know what they're going through at the moment, but they just seem to be so close. They're spending a lot of time together and time out. And my marriage is really struggling and I don't know what to do. And I'm trying to speak to my mum for good advice and we don't know what's happening. And somebody over here is seeing that person and saying, I can't believe they're getting such good support from their extended family. They have a really good relationship with their mum and they've got lots of family and friends around them. And I just feel really isolated. And can you see how the pattern goes on and on and on all the time? As long as we're doing life alongside other people, things are always going to be happening. Other people's emotional responses to things, whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're intended towards us or not intended towards us, we are in the crossfire all the time of different arrows coming our way. We can't stop that. We can't do anything about that. And God showed me in that season when I was in that place, and I had no idea at that stage how, you know, what this nightmare was going to be like and how the story with my son was going to unfold. But I remember going to the toilet cubicle and saying to God, I can't cope with this lady. I can't cope with her. She's just pressing all my buttons and she's making it so much worse. And God saying, okay, the lady doesn't have a problem. The lady's okay, but you need to choose how you're going to handle that lady. She's not doing anything out of spite. She's clearly not really thinking about how what she's doing is affecting you. And you know when you turn a situation around, things that are going wrong in your life, a lot of it depends on what language you use to address that. So if you say that person is being very insensitive and irritating, the person that's carrying the problem, the person that's responsible for the problem and the solution for that problem is the other person. If you say, I feel really irritated by that person, then it's you that's carrying the problem and the solution to the problem. Because the Bible talks about wearing a breastplate of righteousness. It says that if you are walking with God and if you're a Christian, that God has already equipped you with everything that you need. And if we wear his armor, we have a breastplate of righteousness. And righteousness means being right. Ultimately, it means being right with God and God looking at us and saying, you know what, I'm not going to judge you for the bad things that you've done. I'm not going to condemn you because as far as I'm concerned, we are good, we are right, and you can come into my presence. You can be with me because I am all good. And as humans, we mess up. We do things outside of the center of God's will. We shoot our little arrows that affect other people, whether we mean to or don't mean to. But God says, I love you so much that I'm going to give you this righteousness that means that we can still have this relationship. We can still know one another. But very often when we go into battle because we're afraid or we think we're going to try and do it differently, instead of putting on that breastplate of righteousness that God's given to us, we say, I'm going to make my own armor. And this armor is going to be called self-protection. And I'm not going to let anybody in. Or this armor is going to be called judgment. And I'm going to say, it's your problem. You're the one that's causing a problem here. You're the one that's being insensitive to my needs right now. And I'm going to make this your issue. The armor that we can put on could be comparison of, well, I'm not doing as well as that person, but at least I'm doing better than that person. And we wear that instead. Because we know that our hearts need to be protected from being hurt. And we don't want to come under judgment, come under fire. But we're trying to find all these different solutions to protect ourselves, whether life's easy or whether life's difficult. And we're going through this big battle like I was at the time. We try and protect ourselves. But you know the armor that God gives us, he says, it's not about judging people. It's not about saying that person's wrong or that person has a problem or that person's done something to me and now I can't ever get over it. It's not about accepting those wounds that come in and pierce through the armor and actually go deep down into our soul and start to fester and they actually become the death of us. And I know that there are some people in this room that have had things happen to them where that wound has gone so deep that you feel like it's affected everything from that point on in your life and it's been really, really difficult. But you know, the armor of God, it protects you first and also God heals, which is absolutely incredible. And it doesn't mean you don't feel it, because we tend to think of arrows as like these little tiny things, almost like needles, don't we? I know that when I visualize arrows, I think of them like that, like on the Bayeux tapestry where you've got these little tiny needle type arrows. But arrows are big, and when they are sent off skillfully, they're going to hit you hard and it's going to hurt. So even with your strong armor on, it's still going to deal you a blow that makes you go, oh my goodness, what was that? And sends you reeling. But when you're wearing this armor of righteousness where God says, you know what? That thing that you feel you've been wounded by, you can be healed from it because I've made it all good. I've made the situation all good. I've already gone ahead of you. I've done everything you need for your healing. If we're wearing that breastplate of righteousness, we can receive that healing from God. And if we know that we can have as much patience and love as we need to deal with whoever is in our lives that is causing us that grief or causing us that irritation, then we can say, actually, because I don't get to choose how that person behaves, what I can do is say, it doesn't matter how that person behaves, because as long as I've got my armor on, I know that it's good between me and God. Now, that person might have issues that they need to deal with, but that's between them and God, and they're probably not wearing the armor of righteousness, and that's why they're shooting their weapons off all over the place. But when we walk with God, he says, here, you can have this. It can protect you. You don't need to allow other people to be in control of your emotions and how you react and determine how your situation is going to be. You don't need to be a victim all your life from whatever somebody did to you many, many years ago, no matter how dark and deep and painful that thing is, because I'm going to give you something new to wear, something that means that you can continue in the battle, that you don't have to hide from life and retreat. You can keep going with that on. And in Isaiah, it says that this armor that we wear, it's not just any armor, it's God's armor. He actually wears this armor. It's his armor, and he has given it to us. And the extraordinary thing about knowing God and finding God is that the work of receiving all the stuff that God has for you has already been done. Because when Jesus came and he lived the perfect life that we can't live because we're busy all the time trying to fend other people off, being hurt by people, being shaped by different people in our lives. So many of us had stuff set in our lives before we were even old enough to make choices about how we were going to go. Our lives were already confused. Our reactions were already set because we had to just try and defend or react depending on what was happening around us. But when God sent Jesus down, he said, Jesus is going to live that perfect life that you haven't been able to. And Jesus is going to die the death where really you should have been separated from me because your life had already gone off track. And because of that, when I look at you, I see Jesus. I see this pure, perfect person who hasn't done anything wrong, who has never been sinned against and therefore had to make these like really complicated defensive decisions in their lives about how they're going to do things. Because when I look at you, I see Jesus. You're wearing his armor. He's given you his robes. He's given you the king's armor. And it means that everything is good with me and you. That's what righteousness is. Everything is good between us and God. And we can know him and walk with him. He's our Father. He loves us. He wants to give us blessings. He wants to help us on our way. He wants to provide us with everything we need before we even know that we need it. And I'm talking practically, but I'm also talking emotionally and relationally inside of us. I know that God was preparing me for years before I got to fight some of the biggest battles of my life. I saw that God had provided for me every step of the way, every single year of my life up till that point. And when things went horribly wrong and I just was swimming in this sea of grief and going, what on earth has just happened? Where was the miracle? It didn't happen. I could look back and say, okay, God has never let me down before. He's walked me through it. He's prepared me for it. So even though I can't even see where my future is going right now, if God's been good so far, he will continue to be good. And if God has known all along what the plan is, then he must have a plan on the other side of this grief and this loss and this tragedy as well. And when you do that and you put on this armor and this identity that God has given you and you step into that and you become this person that you actually were created to be and that you've always supposed to be that person, it's just that other stuff came along the way to distract us. It means we can stand before God, we can know him, we can love him, and no matter what else is happening to us in the present or what else has happened to us in the past, we can be whole, we can be free from those wounds that are going to threaten to fester and to take away the life within us, and we can stand strong in the battle, and we can say, yeah, I'm going to do this, it's going to be okay, I'm wearing the king's armor. And I know that when I see stuff coming towards me, like King Jehoshaphat did, and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm gonna go down, this is it, I can't cope with this, that when we cry out to God, that he will help us and he will be there for us. I'm gonna pray, I'm gonna finish, because I really want the stuff that I feel that God wanted me to bring tonight. I want to make sure that we have time to think about that. So if we're just gonna bow our heads, and we're just going to have a little bit of quiet in the room because I want you all have time to think about that and think about the areas of your life where you feel like you've been struggling with those wounds and also what kind of armor you've been wearing in order to try and cope with what it is that life has thrown at you. Father God, I want to thank you so much that you know every person in this room. You know their stories. You've seen them right from the very beginning. And you've walked with them all through the years of their life. And you know better than anybody the turmoils and the hurts and the confusions that are going on inside of people's lives. And you also know the cry that people have, the things that they want, the desires of their hearts, their hopes for their future, the things that they really would love to see happen. And maybe for some people, they've actually given up on that because they feel like it's too late or that they've stopped trying and hoping. God, I thank you that you are a God who cares about all these small details. I thank you, God, that you see the battles that we all fight on a daily basis, the relationships that are difficult, the practicalities and the responsibilities that we have to carry every day that sometimes we feel like not doing. Some of us, it's things that have happened in the past that have shaped our personalities and we feel like maybe we'll never be rid of them, that we will always keep coming back to these things that have happened to us. For some of us, it's the mistakes that we've made, the things that we've done, and we really feel like we're carrying that burden around with us. God, I want to pray that we would see these things as you see them, that you would give us your eyes to see and identify in our lives where these wounds are, where we've been trying to carry the burden and fight the battle on our own. And God, I pray that you might give us faith to look at you and say, God, I'm willing to wear your armor. I'm willing to go into life and take this amazing exchange that you've given me where you gave the life of your son so that I could come to know you, that he stood in my place so I could stand in his. And God, I don't want to fight this battle on my own anymore. I'm tired of coming up with my own defense strategies. I'm tired of trying to come up with my own solutions for what's happening around me. I just want you to be in control and you to show me what it is that I need to do. And God, I thank you so much that you give this stuff to us, that you want to shower it upon us, that you have done everything so that we can make this possible, as long as we step into what it is that you've got for us and are willing to give our lives to you and see what you can do with us. And God, I pray that you'd be in this room, that you'd be in each heart, and that you continue speaking to each person here today, tomorrow, next week, for the rest of this year, and that you'd be revealing by your Holy Spirit what it is that you want to be doing in our lives. In your name, Jesus. Amen.